scripture reading this morning coming from two different sections. We'll be reading Genesis 19, verses 15 through 29, and then we'll be reading from 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 1 through 9. So please find Genesis chapter 19, beginning at verse 15. Genesis 19, verse 15, this is the word of our God. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in the punishment of the city." But he hesitated. So the men seized his hand and the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him. And they brought him out and put him outside the city. It came about, when they had brought them outside, that one said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you, and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, or you will be swept away." But Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords. Now behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have magnified your loving kindness, which you have shown me by saving my life, but I cannot escape to the mountains, for disaster will overtake me, and I will die. Now behold, this town is near enough to flee to, and it is small. Please let me escape there. Is it not small? That my life may be saved." He said to him, "Behold, I grant you this request, also not to overthrow the town of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there." The name of that town was called Zoar. The sun had risen over the earth when Lot came to Zoar. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and he overthrew those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But his wife from behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Now Abraham arose early in the morning and went to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley. And he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land ascended like the smoke of a furnace. Thus it came about, when God destroyed the cities of the valley, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which Lot lived. And in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 1 to 9, "But false prophets also arose among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you, who will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them, bringing swift destruction upon themselves. Many will follow their sensuality, and because of them the way of the truth will be maligned. And in their greed they will exploit you with false words. Their judgment from long ago is not idle, and their destruction is not asleep. For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly, and if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter, and if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while he lived among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment." This is the word of our God. It stands forever.
Thank you, John. You may have noticed in your bulletin this morning the title of our sermon today, "My Name is Lot." It's going to be a little bit different this morning. I've never done this before. I'm actually going to read word for word my entire sermon. I've written it out, and I've never done that before. And something else is going to be different. I'm going to be asking the questions today, not you. Actually, you can ask questions, of course. But I have three questions for you that I will share with you in a moment. These three questions I'm going to ask you to consider while I'm speaking to you this morning, while I'm reading my sermon about Lot and his history. And I'll share with you those questions in a moment. But first, I want to say that from what I have to say, I am not against relationships with other people. Not against that, never been against that. I love relationships. I'm one of those guys that I think solitary confinement would be a horrible thing. No relationships. Christ had relationships. He said on the night that he was betrayed, "I've really wanted to have this supper with you." He related to his disciples. But relationships at the expense of the approval of Christ are deadly. I'm going to say that again. Relationships at the expense of the approval of Christ are deadly. Please don't forget that. Three questions I want you to consider. Number one, when looking at the life of Lot, when do you think you would have first noticed a problem or problems? That's the first question. When looking at the life of Lot, when do you think you would have first noticed a problem or problems? Number two, is it really fair to say that Lot was all about the present and not about the future? Is that a fair thing to say? Is it really fair to say that Lot was all about the present and not about the future? Number three, if you had been a contemporary of both Lot and Abraham, of both of them, which one of these two men would you rather have been associated with? I'll read that again. If you had been a contemporary of both Lot and Abraham, if you had been living at the time, which one of those two men would you rather have been associated with? Think about that. We will come back to those questions. Now, I trust, and again, this is where you can ask questions later. I trust that in my entire presentation this morning, I have nothing in here that cannot reasonably be deduced, I'll say it that way, from the record that we have in Genesis. My name is Lot. Some people say that it's not how you start, but how you finish that is the most important thing. You know, whenever I hear that, I have to wonder if they are talking about me. I have to say that because, well, I started out really well. I was wealthy, influential, had lots of servants, a family, everything. And I lost it all. My wealth, my influence, my position in the community, my family, my home, everything. Can you believe that after all I had attained, the last time you hear about me, I'm drunk out of my mind and living in a cave? More about that later. We'll get to it. Before we go on, I want you to understand something. I understand that my Uncle Abram became really something special. By special, I mean he was apparently promised by God that through him, that is my Uncle Abram, all the families of the earth would be blessed, if you can imagine that. You know, thinking about that really bothers me because, well, my Uncle Abram and I were equals at one time. No, really. At one time we had wealth, or he had wealth, and I had wealth. He had flocks and herds and tents. I had flocks and herds and tents. I tell you, we were equals. How do you think I ended up in Sodom anyway? But once again, I'm getting ahead of myself, so let me start at the beginning. Like I said, it was a good start, a real good start. I knew my Uncle Abram was onto something. He was worshiping the one true God. Look, I get judged harshly by almost everyone. But just listen to any sermon, Bible study, lecture, or whatever discussion about me, and guess who comes out looking like the irresponsible goof-up, the spiritual failure. That's right, old Lot. But I want you to know something right here in the beginning. When my Uncle Abram left Ur of the Chaldees, who was it that went with him? His father did, at least at the beginning, but none of his friends or cousins, nobody else. Nobody but Sarah, his wife, and me, little old Lot. Yep, I knew those idols were worthless. I knew that the one true God could never be represented by a wood carving or a stone carving, or even some image made out of gold. Yep, I was not going to bow down to those idols. I knew they were all foolishness from the beginning. So when Abram headed out, I was just about the only one to go with him, out to live someplace, who knows where. But I went, because I believed in the one true God. I turned my back on those idols, and I stuck with Uncle Abram. So think about that next time you judge me as a bad guy. Don't just brush over my spiritual credentials. I had a very good start. And truth be told, I did pretty well by my uncle. He was a good teacher, and I was a good learner. He taught me how to work with animals, how to increase my wealth through building up my flocks and herds. That's not easy, but I did it. I learned how to manage my servants and my household. And you know what? Before you even knew it, Uncle Abram and I were equals. Yes, he was very wealthy, but so was I. Equals. I know that because it wasn't long before his servants and my servants were fighting over water rights. You have to know, of course, that water is always a big thing. If you are in the flocks and herds business, you can't maintain your wealth without water. It got so bad that Uncle Abram and I had to sit down and discuss the situation. Not like uncle and nephew, but like, you know, equals. Well, actually, and this is kind of embarrassing, and we won't dwell too long on this, but... Well, we didn't exactly sit down like equals because it was Uncle Abram who came to me first and basically said, hey, you know, we're relatives. Let's not fight among ourselves about this stuff. And Uncle Abe gave me first choice. He told me that he would go the opposite direction from me and that I could choose whatever land I wanted. Well, what would you do? Yes, I chose the best land. That land was almost like the Garden of Eden itself. And why not? You know, it never crossed my mind that Uncle Abram was just being gracious. I actually thought that since I was such a great guy, I deserved his offer. So I headed off towards Sodom with nary a backward glance. And yeah, you already know that's how I ended up in Sodom. Look, I know everybody blames me for heading down towards Sodom. And yeah, that turned out to be a big mistake, but that was not so clear to me at the time. How many times have you made a bad decision that looked right at the time? Anyway, I knew that Sodom was not the greatest place to raise a family and all, but I was a man of business, and I could see where the business opportunities were. And yeah, like I said, there was a lot of bad stuff happening in Sodom, but who knew? Maybe I could change that. Think about it. Between my uncle and me, who is actually going to have the best influence for good in Sodom? Hint. Not Uncle Abram. He was hanging out with his wife and servants, building up his wealth and all, but he was obsessing far too much on something that was completely irrelevant. You see, he kept on talking about having a son. I guess if you're going to bless all the families of the earth, you'd best have a son at some point, or at least I suppose so anyway. And yes, I have to admit, I'm a little annoyed. In fact, I'm more than a little annoyed. I was the one who was with somebody in Sodom. I knew the movers and shakers. I was a mover and shaker. Those folks were happy to have me among them. Seriously, I had the relationships. I had the connections. I had people skills to navigate that snake pit called Sodom. Oh, now, are you surprised to hear me call Sodom a snake pit? Okay, yeah, I'll level with you. I'll call it a snake pit now, which is what it was. Look, like I said, I had connections there. And so did my family. My sons-in-law were comfortable there. They knew people. But we haven't even mentioned my wife. She told me again and again that she would be horrified to leave Sodom. She was a socialite there, knew everyone, and may have had more friends than even I did. But I would have never called the place a snake pit then. That would have seriously cost me all of my connections and contacts. Think about that for a minute. Look at all that I had going on. Now contrast that with dear Uncle Abram, hanging out there with Sarah, hoping that someday he'll have a son based on some vision or something he says he heard from God. Why couldn't he get it through that old gray head of his, not to mention dear Sarah, that those two were not going to have a baby? Come on. How many years do you have to be married, trying and trying to get pregnant, not being successful, till you get used to the fact that, hey, guess what? It isn't working. Do I have to say it? I was the one with my feet on the ground. I was the one who could talk about the way things really were. I wasn't all about pie in the sky by and by. No, I understand the way it really was. Yeah, I believed in God like Uncle Abe, but did he have to take everything so seriously? You know, I heard later that he was so narrow-minded about, well, really, just about everything, that he wouldn't even let his son Isaac, you know, the son they eventually had took him long enough. Anyway, Isaac, when it came time for him to marry, Uncle Abe and Aunt Sarah wouldn't even allow him to marry a local girl. See what I mean? No influence, no vision about how to, you know, fit in. He had no interest in forging any business alliances with local people by having Isaac marry locally. Not like me. No way was I going to miss an opportunity like that. I had my daughters marry local boys with local connections and, well, local vices. You know, come to think of it, I guess I really didn't care about the future that much. I was all about the present, you know, the here and now. That's what was important to me. So, yeah, while I was being celebrated in Sodom, Uncle Abe was thinking about the future. It sure turns out that he took God and his covenant seriously. He was concerned about his posterity. He was deadly serious about obeying God and being a blessing to all the families of the earth. He was looking way down the road, way past the times in which he would live and die. Me, on the other hand, I either couldn't or wouldn't see that far. I was just, you know, living in the moment. Future schmoocher. Living in the now. Living for today. That was what I called being real. Turns out I had an awful lot to learn. My first lesson came, or should have come, one dark day when a group of neighbor kings, led by a guy named Cheetor Lawamar, decided to invade Sodom. Without going into details, this was not a good development for me because the king of Sodom, along with four other kings, they lost the battle, and the next thing I knew, I had been carried off as a prize of war by Cheetor Lawamar and his buddies. Now, here's where I should have started to wise up, but I guess I was just too full of myself. Remember how I said earlier that Uncle Abram was irrelevant while I, Lot, was the happening dude? Tell you what, when you're being carried off by 100 miles, looking at losing everything you had, including your whole family, not to mention all your earthly wealth, believe me, nobody cares what a big shot you were, how important you were, or any of that. Everybody is irrelevant because no one can do anything to change a bad situation, which is the very definition of irrelevant. Anyway, there he was, being carried off to, I don't know, some kind of slavery, I suppose, for the rest of my natural life. I had no prospects, no options, and most of all, no hope. Now that gave me some time to think. Where was all my influence now? Is this how it was all to end? I could hardly think about it, but you know, there was one thing, or rather one person, that I had not considered. Yes, that was my dear, distant Uncle Abram. He heard about this little battle and really didn't seem to care that much about the results. That is, until he heard about me. Know what he did then? He acted, that's what. This guy, who I thought of very little ever since we split up, and who I frankly either ignored or forgot, suddenly became completely relevant. You know how I said earlier that I was the one thinking only of the present, but Uncle Abram was thinking of the future? Well, how's this for thinking of the future? He had 318 servants that he had trained himself, and he had supplied them with the very best equipment for fighting, and he swung into action. He didn't waste even a single minute. He led these 318 guys himself and took off after those kings that had carried me off. And well, he sure did explain to them that they shouldn't have done that. He chased them for over 100 miles, more like 160 actually, and he beat them so soundly that all the goods they had captured, including me and mine, he brought them all back. Yeah, I sure did dodge a bullet there. I should have been thankful. I should have been sorry for my insolence. I should have recognized that I had just experienced the incredible grace of God through a man that I thought didn't matter at all. But I did none of these things. I don't know, I guess. I just didn't think about it very much. The fact that Abram was a godly man who really loved his neighbor, well, whatever. And soon I was back to being the big shot in Sodom once again. But this was not the last time Uncle Abe was to step up and save the lives of me and my family. Or at least some of my family. Now, this next part of the story you already know, so I won't dwell on it too long, but you do need to know that after Uncle Abraham rescued me and mine, things got a lot worse in Sodom. In fact, they got so bad that we soon thought of that little escapade with Cheetor Lawamar and his buds. Well, they were the good old days. Now, why do I say that? Well, one day God himself came to visit Uncle Abraham. He came to visit me too, but I'll get to that in a minute. You see, Sodom and Gomorrah had become an offense to God. So this is what he actually said. Because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know. That's what God actually said. Well, he came down all right. And he was about to destroy the entire cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, including me and mine. But guess what? Guess who intervened a second time? That's right. Dear old Uncle Abe comes to the rescue once again. He pleaded with God to save the righteous souls in Sodom, and God listened to his prayer, and in the end, I was saved out of that mess with just a few members of my family, and it sure seems like the reason is that Uncle Abe prayed for me and mine. Oh my. The injustice of it all. Please think about this one last time, please. I was the one in the gates. I was the one that people came to for counsel. I was the one with all the connections and relationships. Aren't we supposed to have relationships in order to do anything at all for the cause of right? Aren't we constantly being told that you have to have a relationship with people before we can do anything good? I'm telling you, I had all those things. But it turns out that I lacked one key thing that Uncle Abe had. And that was faith. Actually, maybe more like faithfulness. You see, the key thing is that both Uncle Abe and I were faithful, in a sense. It was just that he was faithful to God while I was faithful to the shifting opinions of men. That's what I was faithful to. And boy, oh boy, did I ever find out about the shifting opinions of men on that terrifying night that God destroyed the city. God destroyed the city. And also destroyed all my relationships and goodwill and social business and connections. You remember what happened? Two angels came to my house to tell me and my family to get out of town. Fast. Now. And here's what happened before that. You see, those same two angels came to Sodom, and I, being a prominent citizen of Sodom. That sounds awful funny to say now, doesn't it? Prominent citizen of Sodom. Anyway, they had no place to stay, so they stated that they wanted to spend the night in the open square. Of course, I knew something about what went on in that open square. No way was I going to stand by while they spent the night there. Again, it sounds funny, but thinking about it, why was I such a prominent person in Sodom, you know, a mover and a shaker and all, but had no influence whatsoever over what went on in the open square? Well, don't blame me, but I kept my religion private. Whatever went on in the open square wasn't my business. Hey, if bad things happened in the open square, I could always retreat to my nice safe house where I would always be safe, right? So I invited the two angels to come to stay at my house, my nice safe house, and they finally agreed to do that. Well, something went wrong, really wrong. That night my house was surrounded by the very people that I had all those relationships with. These men from Sodom wanted to attack and abuse my guests. My guests. Me, Mr. Citizen of the Year in Sodom, and they wanted to attack my guests. I did everything I could to protect my visitors. I even put myself at risk. I thought I could reason with these men. They'd always been reasonable before, or so I thought. I actually stepped out the protection of my own house and tried to talk to them. Guess what? They had no interest in talking. No interest in coming to an agreement. No interest in compromise. They wanted one thing and one thing only. They wanted to spend their lustful desires on my guests. Now, before you accuse me of not being reasonable, consider this. I went to the extreme of offering my two daughters to these men, to do with them whatever they wish. But these men weren't interested. I mean, really, what more could a man do? And really, don't get your back up about me offering my daughters. People did this stuff all the time in our culture. Remember, my religion was private. It was private outside my home, and it turns out it was also private inside my home. My relationships were important to me, and if I had to offer up my own daughters to keep my relationships, so be it. But that night, I learned that all my relationships, my going along to get along, my status, my friendships, my mentors, and my proteges, that all counted for absolutely nothing. That night, stepping outside of my house, I saw business partners, friends, and contacts. All kinds of men who I was sure that I knew. Now, all of these things are really important, but then they delivered the worst charge of all. The one charge that I had hoped I would never hear. They called me judgmental. Judgmental? I had built up my entire career against that. Call me anything, anything at all, but not judgmental. But there they were. They told me to get out of their way. Then they said, this one, meaning me, came in to stay here, and he keeps acting as a judge. As a judge. And all I was doing was trying to protect my guests, and now I'm judgmental. You know, I think I finally learned something. Well, you know the rest of my story, a story that ends up in a cave. Those angels helped me get out of Sodom, but on the way, I lost my wife. Not only that, but I wound up fathering two families of people who would be a thorn in the side of my Uncle Abram's posterity, Moab and Ammon. I guess it only makes sense, right? I was all about the present. But I see something now that I couldn't see then, and that is, if you abandon the future, it turns out that the future just might abandon you. If you fear the face of man more than the face of God, you will wind up wishing you had done the opposite. If you think that you can't break off your relationships by being true to God, then you just might find yourself abandoned by God. If you think you can keep your religion private, you will soon learn that those who hate God have no intention of keeping their religion private. And finally, being faithful to God, like Uncle Abraham, is the only path, the only means to really doing anything good in this world, both now and later. Well, I'm signing off now. The last time you hear about me in the Bible, I've lost pretty much everything. Everything that can't fit into a cave, anyway. I sure do hope you've learned something from me. My name is Lot. So I'll ask my questions again. When looking at the life of Lot, when do you think you would have first noticed a problem or problems? Number two, is it really fair to say that Lot was all about the present and not about the future? And number three, if you had been a contemporary of both Lot and Abraham, which one of those two men at the time would you rather have been associated with? So I'll come down here in a moment, and I'd like to hear your responses to those questions. Right now, what I'm trying to do is keep my papers sort of straight. Your thoughts. Start with Jeremiah.
So that last question, who would you rather be associated with? At first, I would have easily said Abraham, but you said at the time.
At the time.
So you painted a pretty good picture of Lot. He was like a man of the world. I mean, he was a popular guy. He had connections in the city, right? So what would you mean? You would be an easy guy to be a friend with. But what would Abraham be? Paint a 30-second picture of Abraham.
Yeah, I think at the time the question was, you know, we got a picture of Lot. He'd have been the guy, or the mover, the shaker. Be the guy you want to show up at the meetings and at the charity events and so forth. Be pretty cool to be seen talking to Lot. Would have been as cool to be seen talking to Abram. I think the answer is no. I think he would have been seen as the irrelevant guy. What is a guy doing? He had this vision of God, and he's going to bless all the families of the earth. Him? Can't even have a kid. He's going to bless the families of the earth. I just think it would not have been cool to be seen at all with Abram. He would have been seen as that, him and Sarah out there, hanging out there, being completely irrelevant. What is he doing? I think he would have been the guy to say, I actually, socially, I think he would have been the guy to stay away from. I had to think hard about that when I was writing that question. Abram, you got to be kidding me. Lot, there's a guy I ought to be seen with. Oh, yes, another question. Same one. Okay. Same question.
You painted a very prideful picture of Lot. I mean, he's not appealing to me at all in his puffed up, I'm hot stuff. Perhaps from a socialite perspective, you would have wanted that kind of thing, but I think from a real person, you would not have enjoyed it. I would not have.
The reason why I say that is it seems like, first of all, his sons-in-law did not want to leave, and his wife didn't want to leave. And I think the real reason why they didn't want to leave is because they had all their connections there. So, and it may be true that you would have seen him as a proud man, but apparently the people living there, there at the time, didn't see him that way. They really had the connections with him. His wife, okay, we know she turned back like she was really, really losing something. What was she losing? Her social connections. All the people that thought she was wonderful, apparently. I find it really intriguing as I study this that Lot was in the gates when he was in the gates. He was a somebody when he met these angels. And he runs up to them, he bows low to the ground. Everybody sees this. He knew who they were, just like Abram did. I'm not sure how he knew, but he did. And then he talks about the open square. Says, don't stay here in the open square. And he knew what was happening there. But as I said there, how does a guy who's in that prominent in the gates have no influence over what goes on in the open square? How's that happen? That's a question we really need to ask ourselves from the life of Lot, I believe. Yes, Dave.
You asked when's the first time you would have noticed that things were going south?
Yes.
I'm wondering, I don't know that he noticed it until fire and brimstone came down. Because even when he was in the house, and he was just trying to appease people, he's like, hey, you guys just back off. But it's not, not until he actually got out of the city and the place was destroyed. Because it's after that he couldn't live in the city of Zoar. And he went and lived in a cave and basically lived a non-existent life after that. That's
as far as we know. It doesn't look too good. And if Peter doesn't tell us that he was a righteous man, we would have every reason to doubt it. The only reason why we know he's righteous is because of what Peter said in the passage that John read this morning. But to your point, I do have to wonder, it seems like the angels are telling you got to get out of Dodge right now. And he's lingering. And so we do know that he went to his sons-in-law and said, you got to get out of here. But his sons-in-law didn't want to listen to him. I do wonder now if it's because he didn't believe it so much himself. I don't know. I'm speculating a little bit too far there. But they, the scriptures tell us they thought he was joking. I mean, you got to think about a guy who had all this going on and ends up the way he does. Okay, John, then Seth.
Peter doesn't just tell us that Lot was righteous. He says, for boy, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawlessness. So, the picture you paint is that Lot was kind of oblivious to this, but the picture that Peter paints is that he did know. So the question that you're asking is, when would Lot have noticed that things were going south? Peter answers for us and says, he knew it all along.
Well, I think he knew the condition, but he didn't know the consequences. That's what I see. And Peter's very clear on that point. And Calvin makes the same point, that Lot didn't like what was going on. My point today is more that it's not enough not to like it. It's what are you going to do about it? And he certainly appears as if he would much rather be accepted by the people that were doing those kinds of things than doing anything about it.
Well, and Peter is also saying, I believe in the same book, that people believe that it's just going to go on like this.
Right. That, yeah.
So Lot was not looking for an immediate judgment.
Right. Yeah. For whatever future he thought he had, whatever that was. But he really wasn't a future guy. Yes?
That was pretty much what I was going to say. I mean, I do think Peter does paint a clear picture of... I think even before he would have gone to Sodom, he would have understood what Sodom was and what the conditions were like. But I don't think Lot is any different than most of American Christianity. He doesn't agree with it. He doesn't like it. He's not going to promote it in his home. But, hey, I got to provide for my family. I got to have a job. If I'm going to be in a workplace, I might as well try to have a little influence there. I'm going to try and live out my Christianity in my circle without forcing it on everybody else. But I do think, I mean, I think absolutely the fact that Peter tells us that, I agree with you. If it wouldn't be for Peter, we would have every reason to believe he was an unbeliever. At the same time, because of Peter, we have every reason to be thankful that as complacent as we are, we still might actually really be Christians, and we really do need to learn from that example. But I think he clearly was tormented by it. I think he didn't agree with it, but he was very complacent.
He was tormented, but he had ultimately made peace with the wickedness that was going on. And of course, one thing we say here all the time, we talk about this, is it's a hard thing. It's easy to make the peace. It's hard to know exactly what to do about it. In Abram's case, what Abram appears to have done was he appears to have, and it said this in Genesis chapter 18, where God says, "Shall I show Abram what I'm doing?" I think this is the biggest contrast. And God says about Abram, he's going to teach his children to follow me. And I know we talk about that here all the time. What can we do about all this? And we say, well, you can teach your children. But interestingly enough, in this entire passage, in this entire story, the one thing Abram did about all the wickedness going on, the one thing he did do was he did teach his children. Your child, Isaac, in this case. He did do that. Lot didn't even do that, despite all his relevance.
It wasn't really one of your questions, but wouldn't you say that the difference really between them was what their view of the future was?
I think that's the... I don't know if I say that's a major difference, but it's a big difference. It's just huge. And I've heard a lot of... We've all heard about Lot and Abram, but we don't hear about that aspect of it very much. At least I haven't very much. Abram was serious about the future. Lot... He just flat out wasn't, best we can tell. And even the Peter passage seems to indicate that as well. No judgment. Yeah, Brian.
Question / comment. When you think of Abraham, you know, how influential was he to Sodom and Gomorrah? Other than rescuing Lot, it doesn't appear like he was trying to be influential. Do you think he should have been trying to be more influential? Or can you address that thought?
Yeah. The question was, should Abram have tried to have been more influential for what was going on down there? Hard question for me to answer. It looks like it was a pretty big distance, because their flocks and herds were really big, and it looks like he was a distance away from Sodom. That appears to be the case. That's a hard question for me to answer. I'll address it this way, although I don't think this is an answer. I know I talk about my own father a lot. My own father, I don't think I ever mentioned this. In fact, I didn't find this out until I had a conversation with my brother the other day. I think I talked a lot, or talked before from time to time, about a real blasphemous man that was our neighbor growing up. he was just full of cursing and oaths all the time. He was a mechanic. He was very loud. And... the man just cursed all the time. I mean, people knew him as a curse meister. That's all he could do. Foul, wicked man. His mouth, anyway. My father would pray for him every night. We'd have family devotion. My father would pray for him every night. And he hated, well, I don't know if he hated my father, but there were some things that he said about my father were just not very complimentary. Let's just say that. Well, I don't know if he hated him, but he didn't like him. Every night my father would pray for him. Up until about 2 weeks ago, I thought this man died lost. Turns out, in a conversation with my brother, that this man actually turned to Christ towards the end of his life. I never knew it. This foul, blasphemous, oath-spewing man. We found out about it through a mutual Sunday school teacher that also knew this man. What I think, Ryan, is that I don't think that that was the first time, we all know this, I don't think that was the first time Abram prayed for Sodom. I think he would have done it before. He obviously had some idea what was going on there. This is why I say that. You know how it went from 50 to 40, 30, and we wind up with 10, right? You know how we wind up with 10, right? Because we have, let's see, we have Lot and his wife, right? And he has two daughters, right? So that's four, right? We got four, Lot, his wife, his two daughters. And we know that he had other daughters. We don't know how many. And he also had sons-in-law. So we conclude that he probably had three other daughters and three more sons-in-law, giving him 10. We don't know that for sure. But I think he knew how many. I think he knew what was going on with his brother there. I just don't think that was the first time he ever prayed about it. I think that's how he was influencing the place. I say that about my father because my father ultimately had a lot of influence in that blasphemous man, even while he hated my father, or appears to have. So I can't answer it exactly. I can just kind of give you that reference. Yes, Dave.
I think to put it into perspective, we should put it into today's model. We need to be influential in the circles that we are. You know, if Abraham had his flocks and his herdsmen and all those people, that was his area. You know, we don't live in California. We're not very influential out there in promoting the gospel. You know, we can be maybe through prayer and things and supporting ministries out there. But I mean, in some sense, that's what Abraham did when he went and rescued Lot. He went for a brief time to support that area, and then he went back to his own, you know, neighborhood per se. But that's really where it boils down.
Yeah, and he sure had influence over 318 servants of his, right? And some serious influence there.
I mean, you know, we think about yesterday. You know, we went up to the Exeter area. Well, now what are we going to do back home? You know, what are we going to do in our area of influence?
Where we are.
Yeah.
Where we live.
So I mean, that would be kind of to Ryan's point of question.
Yeah, and. Christ even said, you know, you shall be my witnesses first in Jerusalem. That's where they were. Then these other places. Start there. Start in Jerusalem. Get to the uttermost parts of the earth eventually. But you're not going to get to the uttermost parts of the earth if you don't start in Jerusalem. Yes, Audrey.
Even in light of looking at how Abraham went and initially rescued Lot in that first altercation when he rescued Lot and his family. But we can see that even after Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot did not go find refuge with Abraham. I don't you think that says something that maybe over the years something broke down here because of spiritual separation? Why would he not go find refuge with Abraham?
You're talking about after the scene with those kings.
Yeah, well, Abraham initially went to rescue Lot and his family years before.
Right.
But after Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot chose not to seek refuge with Abraham.
Yeah, and Audrey's bringing up a question. We've talked about it, in our, you and I have talked about this. And I can't figure that out at all. I still can't. To me, it's really pretty simple, right? I'm Lot. Okay, I've had an embarrassing run here. Lost my wife. Lost my family. Have a couple incestuous daughters, that's pretty much all I got. Oh, and some alcohol. How about if I head back to live with Uncle Abram and he doesn't do it? And I do not know why.
No evidence of it.
Yeah, no evidence of it anyway. Yeah, that he ever went back and said, to me that'd be like the first thing, okay, I know somebody who has some stuff. I head back there. He doesn't do it. Was he too embarrassed and ashamed? I don't know. Maybe he did, but the Bible doesn't tell us. The Bible ends up with him in the cave. Tough spot.
What was your second question?
My second question was, is it really fair to say that Lot was about the present and not about the future? I think that's kind of been addressed a little bit. Three questions again. When looking at the life of Lot, when do you think you would have first noticed a problem or problems? Second, is it really fair to say that Lot was about the present, not about the future? And thirdly, if you had been a contemporary of both Lot and Abram, which one of those would you have wanted to be associated with? So, hope you, my last sentence there, or my last statement, I sure do hope you've learned something from me. My name is Lot. So hope we all learned something this morning from, Wes.
To answer your first question there, if I'm looking at it from a perspective, where would I have noticed where Lot went wrong?
Yeah, where you and I have looking at this situation.
I mean, just based on the Bible, I would have said, right when Abraham asked him where he wanted to go, right there, he shouldn't have said, oh, I'll take this. What he should have responded to his mentor and his father figure, well, where should I go? Where do you think I should go? That's what he should have said. Right when he chose for himself, that's where it started.
That does seem to be a bit of a problem. Because the Bible says He actually didn't look to his mentor at all. He looked at the land. He saw that it was really a lot of water there. Interesting phrase, it was like the Garden of God, which I take to believe like the Garden of Eden. I think that's what that's saying there. And he was not thinking about any counsel at all from Uncle Abe. He was thinking about Lot.
How can we do that?
Really? No, we already know.
Yeah, we can make that decision.
Bad decision for Lot.
I can create my own path. I can create my own future.
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about here. What if we have counsel here, and what if we reject it? Then later on we pray to God. Well, hey, man, the prayer was already answered in the counsel that you rejected. And the Bible talks about wisdom like that. And wisdom shouts. Proverbs talks about wisdom shouts for attention. And then, when you reject wisdom and things go south, wisdom says, it's too late. You rejected me and now you can't figure it out. That's the first two chapters of Proverbs.
That's kind of what happened with Lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what happened. Well, thank you for your attention here this morning.